What is going on with Dave Chappelle these days? His latest special, it's kind of a lot, even for him.
I have a question for the audience. And this is a real question. I'm not joking around. Is it possible that a gay person can be racist?
It's interesting that on the one hand, some people will say it's just jokes. But on the other hand, people say that Dave Chappelle is such a groundbreaking comedian because he's not just telling jokes, he's telling truths.
Comedy is supposed to be provocative, right? But is there a place where comedy crosses a line?
You guys are confusing the emotions. You think I hate gay people, and what you're really seeing is that I am jealous of gay people. Oh, I'm jealous. I'm not the only black person that feels this way. We blacks, we look at the gay community and we go, God damn it, look how well that movement is going.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. At Detroit's Fillmore Theater this past summer, comedian Dave Chappelle performed four shows that became his current Netflix special, The Closer.
I need you guys to know something. And I'm going to tell you the truth, and don't get freaked out. This is going to be my last special for a minute. It's all good. It's all good. Listen to me. I did it in Detroit for that reason. You know why? Because I talked so much about Detroit in the first special, I figured I might as well do the last special here. Sorry about that, by the way.
Today, we're going to get three different perspectives on what Chappelle was doing on stage in Detroit. One critic, one stand-up, and one journalist who partakes on comedy club stages now and then. Let's start things off with NPR TV and media critic Eric Deggans, who wrote about the Detroit shows. You know, Dave Chappelle has been with us for so long, it's almost hard to remember what made him what he was, you know, what really put him on the map. Over time, what is it about his writing that's made him a standout for you?
I guess what he's been able to do is tell really important and impressive truths about race and society and men and women and, all kinds of interesting things. And what's interesting to me about Chappelle, and I've been watching his career. I interviewed him for the first time right before Chappelle's show debuted back in the day. And I even went to one of his stand-up comedy shows in Atlanta right after he came back from South Africa, after he walked away from Chappelle's show. Amid the pressure of making the third season. So, I've talked to him here and there over the past couple decades and watched his career. And it's been interesting to watch his ability as a stand-up comic just get bigger and better and stronger. And I think that's one of the most compelling things about most of the stand-up specials that he's done for Netflix is that you get this sense you're watching the stand-up comic at the height of his power. You know, this is a guy who started telling jokes when he was really young, has been doing it and doing it and doing it for decades, and now just has the ability to walk into a room and even seemingly off the top of his head. Of course, his specials are probably not like that, but there's footage of him on YouTube just sort of getting up on stage at a comedy club and just talking for, an hour or two. Just things that just cross his mind. So he has the ability, his comic mind is so sharp, and he has the ability to work a crowd so specifically that it is really kind of an impressive thing to watch whenever he gets on a stage.
When I've watched Dave Chappelle, I feel like over the years, he's done a really masterful job of kind of bringing us in and in some cases implicating us by trying to get us laugh at things that are squirmy. And he doesn't let himself off the hook. You know, he acknowledges his own culpability things sometimes when he's addressing subjects that are really hard to talk about. Why do you say that with this special at the Fillmore in Detroit, why do you feel like he went too far?
Well, a lot of different reasons. There's a lot of stuff in this special. One of the things that was interesting to me about it is that There's not that many points in this special where he is self-deprecating or talks about where he makes mistakes. A lot of this special is about him reacting to other people, you know, criticizing him or the way other people have, you know, gay people have reacted to try to silence people who criticize them. In previous specials, you know, he's told a lot of self-deprecating jokes about his life, but we didn't get much of that here. And that might be one reason why the special feels like he's taking a lot of shots at other people rather than, you know, talking about himself as much. But to me, I think he was very deliberately and often pushing these buttons that he knew were sensitive topics, particularly for the audience who might typically be into him and the audience that he's cultivated on Netflix. So I think there's a method to him joking about Jews, to him joking about gay people, to him joking about transgender people in a way that challenges sort of the conventional notions about how we talk about all of those topics. And the other thing that kind of bummed me out about the special is that I didn't feel like there was any insight behind the challenges. You know, his overall thesis, particularly when it came to gay people and transgender people, was that, you know, he's angry at the way some gay people seem to access white privilege in order to support their civil rights struggle. I think that's debatable. And, you know, saying that he was jealous of gay people because their civil rights struggle seemed to move quicker, I think ignores a lot of things about timing. And, you know, gay people seem to have gotten a lot of traction in society more recently. You know, people of color, black folks especially, have been fighting civil rights struggles since the 50s and the 60s and earlier than that. So it's just a different time.
In our country, you can shoot and kill a n***a, but you better not hurt a gay person's feelings. And this is precisely the disparity that I wish to discuss.
But beyond all of that, you know, if you're going to press buttons and if you're going to talk about these issues in a way that, you know, some people can feel belittled and stereotyped and unfairly maligned, then at the very least, I should feel like I'm learning something or that there is some revelation about this. And I don't think we get that in this special. And, you know, it's disappointing to me as a longtime fan.
Late in the show, he says that there is that taking a man's livelihood is akin to killing him. And he's clapping back at what he might say is cancel culture. My first thought was, how is Dave Chappelle's livelihood these days? But there's something more to this this fixation on cancel culture. Why do you think this is a button that Dave Chappelle is pushing?
Yeah. Well, a lot of comics who complain about cancel culture are making a very fine living. I mean, I've always thought it was ironic that people like Jerry Seinfeld and Dave Chappelle have been complaining about getting canceled because nobody's canceling them and they're making a ton of money. But, you know, beyond that, you know, his example was Kevin Hart, who, you know, was announced as Oscar host. Some gay activists brought up the fact that he had told homophobic jokes in his past. Kevin Hart claimed to have apologized for them, but, you know, there's some, you know, the apologies were a little mealy and a little wishy-washy and a little ambiguous. The Oscars Academy basically just asked him to apologize again, and he refused, and he quit, and then he apologized for the jokes anyway. And so one of the things that Chappelle does is that he tells stories from his perspective in order to make his points. But sometimes he leaves out really important details that completely change the situation. And if you're making an allegation that gay people pressured Kevin Hart out of a job and threatened his livelihood and threatened his life in a way, which is what he's implying in that moment in the special, then you got to acknowledge that Kevin Hart decided to walk away from that job. And he decided to walk away from that job when the Oscar Academy gave him a very clear path to keeping it. And it could have been a teachable moment where everybody talked about homophobia in comedy. But instead, Kevin Hart got upset and walked away from the Oscars. And now Dave Chappelle is trying to act like he's some sort of martyr. And you know, this happens several times in the stand-up special where Dave Chappelle will tell a tailored version of an incident and leave out details that don't serve his thesis. And again, it's just a way of like not really being fair, and it's a way of sort of simplifying the issues in a way that's that doesn't help anybody. And in the end, you don't get any insight to what's happening because he's not really describing what happened.
Hmm. There are some people coming to Dave Chappelle's defense, particularly, you know, guys who've been longtime fans of Chappelle, maybe near to him in age, not just guys either. You wrote this piece that was pretty critical of Dave, and there have been other criticisms from other Black writers. I was curious about what kind of reaction you're getting to what you wrote.
Really intense. I mean, a lot of people have reacted to it. A lot of people have pushed back against it. But I've written controversial columns in the past, and there's an odd sort of cycle to it. One of the things that happened is that Laura Ingraham on Fox News mischaracterized my column, and so I'm getting a bunch of complaints and insults and pushback from people who hadn't read my column. They're just reacting to what she said about my column. She implied that I was saying that Dave Chappelle used white privilege to enable his homophobia and transphobia, but I was making a more complex point that he was citing white privilege amongst gay people as a justification for cracking these jokes that are homophobic and transphobic. And it's obvious in the piece, if you read the two paragraphs before the line where I say this, it's obvious what I'm saying. But, you know, we've reached a point where, you know, a lot of people are not interested in having a discussion. They just want to argue. And in particular, there's a lot of people out there who want to take pot shots at what they view as cancel culture or what they view as people being too quote unquote woke. But what this really is people who are oppressed and marginalized insisting on having their say and insisting on being respected. And I would think of if anybody would appreciate that and respect that, it would be a Black man, and it would be a Black comic. And so, again, that's one reason why this special was just so disappointing to me, because, you know, people who are marginalized from groups who are marginalized for whatever reason should be looking for ways to hold each other up and help each other and not say, well, you know, your struggle seems to have moved faster than my struggle, so now I'm going to criticize you. You know, it's unfortunate that so much of that criticism is just ad hominem attacks, you know, insulting me, you know, cursing me out on social media. That kind of stuff is just unfortunate. And again, doesn't lead to any kind of discussion and isn't about ideas or anything like that. But, you know, there's this one of these other ideas that comes through is that people say, well, you know, can't you take a joke, or it's just jokes. And so it's interesting that on the one hand, some people will say it's just jokes. But on the other hand, people say that Dave Chappelle is such a groundbreaking comedian because he's not just telling jokes. He's telling truths. Right. So if he's telling truths, if he's a groundbreaking comedian because he's telling truths, then we have to look at what he's saying. And we have to call them out if it's not exactly truths or if they're rooted in prejudice or stereotypes. And you know, I would do that for any comic. So I wish more of the criticism that I was seeing from social media and in emails and things like that, I wish more of it was about the ideas in my column and less of it was just people defending a comic they love.
Eric Deggans is a TV and media critic with NPR. You can read his essay on Chappelle's The Closer at npr.org. Eric, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with two comedians, including one who was in the audience at the Fillmore Theater in Detroit.
he, and this is something that's becoming truer as he gets older, is he's transitioning from a comedian, you know, someone who says things just to make you laugh, to being more so a storyteller.
We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
We're continuing our conversation now about Dave Chappelle's controversial Netflix special recorded at Detroit's Fillmore Theater over four performances this summer. It's called The Closer. There are a lot of opinions about this special, both receptive and critical, but there were a couple of guys that we really wanted to hear from on this. Joe Ossim is a comedian. He is also a queer American and host of the monthly Neapolitan Ice Cream Open Mic in Detroit. Joe, it's nice to have you back again.
Nice to be back.
Also with us today is Bryce Huffman, a Detroit-based journalist, former host of Michigan Radio's Same, Same, Different podcast exploring issues of identity, and, didn't know if you know this, side gig comedian. Bryce was at the Fillmore for one of those shows when Chappelle performed over the summer. Bryce, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the room that you saw there? It was impossible at some point during the Netflix special not to start to notice like what people who were, we could see, you know, that the camera was letting us see were doing. But what did you see in that audience? What, first of all, who all was in the room?
It was a weird mix of people of all ages. I saw people who, you know, were perhaps seeing their very first live comedy show of that magnitude. So there were people of all races, all religions. I saw people with hijabs on. It was honestly a weird melting pot of comedy fans, which makes it all the more ironic that, you know, we're talking about him for being so controversial. When I saw it live, one of the things that I was noting was the different types of laughs I heard in the crowd. You know, that might sound funny to someone who doesn't do comedy, but you get kind of applaud laughs, which are like, they're laughing, but really they're clapping loudly. They're cheering for what you're saying, right? Then there's laughs that are like uncomfortable laugh. Like, that's a topic I know I'm not supposed to laugh at, but he squeaked a laugh out of me anyway, kind of laughs. And then you had people who were just genuinely caught off guard by the timing, by the way he sets his punchlines up, you know, falling into like the rhythm of the laughs. So, you know, I heard all of those kinds of laughs in the crowd. And I know that Chappelle, you know, someone who's been doing this for, you know, since he was 15 years old, so, you know, 33 years at this point, he's an expert at how to get each of those laughs out of the audience.
So the meat of the show and the part that's getting the most attention is when he gets to a point where he announces he would like to address the LGBTQ community. So what he was suggesting is that there's a largely white mainstream gay community that's not owning its own racism and not really being honest about its feelings about Black America. Bryce, I was curious, first of all, where he went after that hit with you and how you saw the audience reacting to that.
So I've actually long noticed in the Black community, there, even among, you know, Black LGBTQ allies and people in that community, there is a noticeable tension with the white LGBTQ community in how they can dominate a social space, right? So one of the things Chappelle has been, you know, as of this special, really addressing is the inherent whiteness in the LGBTQ movement nationally, right? And a lot of the progress that 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 community has been able to make has been on the back of white male privilege, even though they are a marginalized community. And he points out that intersection really interestingly. And although I do find it, I guess, admirable that he can point that out so easily and so eloquently, it does still have its own homophobic tendencies and attitudes behind it, if that makes sense. You know, the idea that a lot of Black Americans buy into this idea of there being a gay or trans agenda, air quotes around the word agenda. And they view that community and a lot of the progress they've made with skepticism, the same way that Black people have viewed the mainstream feminist movements with skepticism, because the racism and racist attitudes of the people at the forefront of those movements. So what Chappelle is really doing at that point in the show is, I think he was trying to gauge where the audience feels about those communities and the tension that exists there. And he does this a lot. If you watch his comedy, you see him scanning the audience left to right, up and down. You see him, you know, as he's doing his pauses, he's looking for different reactions. He's looking for people's facial expressions so he can tell where he wants to direct the show next and what tone he wants to set.
We hear very early on in this show that Chappelle was being intentional about picking Detroit for the venue for this. That, you know, he kind of came in with his heart on his sleeve, and he wanted to make up in some way for jokes he'd made about the city in the past. Either of you have a read on why he did pick Detroit to do this?
I mean, I have a very amateurish read on it, which maybe speaks to my experience or lack of as a comedian. But like, I don't know, no one called me to talk about his last year here because it went kind of differently from what I respect. Bryce, I don't know if you went to that one too, but the last one here was notable for different reasons. And I can see as a performer wanting to get that one back. If you want to have a better story to leave with, or you want to have a better thing on, you know, that, you know, sticks out to me as a reason why he kind of picked Detroit to put his foot into like that.
Am I remembering that Mr. Chappelle was somewhat inebriated when he was on stage in his last Detroit appearance?
Yeah, the story goes he's hanging out with famous or potentially infamous rapper Danny Brown, who's from Detroit. Danny Brown asked Dave if he wanted to smoke a joint with him. Dave was like, oh, yeah, I'll smoke a joint before the show. Chappelle says in this skit on Sean's album that he never felt this way from smoking weed before, so he's not entirely sure it was weed. So he tells his road manager, hey, I'm about to bomb, and then true to his professional prescription, as he calls it, he did bomb. So he chose Detroit, I think, because he's always appreciated the challenge that a Detroit audience can really make for a comedian.
Yeah, and there are consequences in a Detroit audience. That's another thing that a lot of comics yes. don't want to be, you know, we don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. But we got great audiences, but we'll tell you.
The fact is also, though, that Detroit is a city that's made news in recent years for the murders of trans women. And as much as, you know, it is interesting to sort of think about Chappelle on a craft level, you know, there are plenty of people who have pointed out that things that get said in a comedy club definitely have consequences in people's lives. Do you think that there's something particularly biting about Chappelle landing these jokes here? Joe, I was curious for your thoughts on this.
I mean, I think there's a lot of that side of the story that I don't think, I mean, we talk about, you know, expectations going into a room. I don't think anybody expected Dave Chappelle to bring, you know, the pain of trans people to the forefront the way he can bring the pain of a Black community to the forefront. So when we get these type of jokes, I don't think I expected Dave to have Chappelle to have a particularly, you know, nuanced or on the ground feel for that. You know, and the grand sense of power dynamics, you know, I can't be racist to Dave Chappelle because I don't have that kind of power, but it's how power works. You know, in that same way that, you know, we have, you know, as performers with a large scope, you know, you kind of do have to consider, or you might be asked to consider the impacts of your actions. And here, yeah, like, you know, that's a thing that can come up. I mean, we take a look at comedians' statements through a political lens sometimes in terms of their call to action. What are they asking folks to do? They're asking folks to laugh at something. A lot of times that's pain with a little bit of distance. you know, his project is to be a performer, to be an entertainer, to give people something to remember them by. You know, there's plenty of people, you know, I learned that from Dave Chappelle. So when Paul Mooney told me that they wouldn't let Hattie McDaniel in to see Gone with the Wind, you know, they certainly would let trans people in to see the, you know, they'd let queers in to see the Dave show. So, hey, we've, you know, we can say we've gotten so far,
yeah,
right?
Right. We've come a long way,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, one of the things I really have always appreciated about Dave Chappelle is that he, and this is something that's becoming truer as he gets older, is he's transitioning from a comedian, you know, someone who says things just to make you laugh, to being more so a storyteller. And he knows how to craft a story that even if I don't agree with his view on something, the way he tells a story can make me ponder on it and think about it and truly examine how I actually feel about something in a way that I don't think a lot of other comedians have the ability to do. You know, while I don't necessarily think he would be the direct link to the generation of comics that are coming up, I also think, you know, his influence is there, you know, the same way that Eddie Murphy's influence was on him and Patrice O'Neill and even comedians who weren't of the same fame or caliber. So, yeah, I think his ability to tell stories has, in a way, really influenced a lot of comedians.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes for listening and streaming at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's pod episode was produced by Laura with Mercedes Mejia. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.